Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
People want to make it work. They want to make it work together. And I will protect their rights and the rights of everybody.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
What the city should be doing are those things that are absolutely critical where we can do it better than the private side.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed, it is a Friday. John Gambling with you right here at Newstalk Radio 710 WOR with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Cold. Thank goodness we got away with a miracle, whatever you want to call it.
It's an extraordinary story.
It is an extraordinary story. You know, still, I was just on the phone on the way down here. There were two police officers, and I think everything's good. There were two police officers that were stabbed yesterday by an emotionally disturbed person. And one of them not serious, the other one stabbed in the eye. I'm going to go visit him later today. Hopefully he won't lose his eye. But, you know, there's a constant...
Well, I was going to ask you about that. The fact that, you know, not only being a mayor of New York, but being a resident of New York and being in this business that I have had the joy of for over 30 years, one of the great parts is you never know what's going to happen.
You never know what's going to happen. But on the thing that is so frustrating is most things that happen every day are wonderful things. I gave the speech yesterday, our State of the City speech, and ended it by introducing a couple who had moved here from northern China, the city of 3,000 people. They live in Queens, a borough of 3 million people. He's studying at Brooklyn College. She's working 7 days a week. They couldn't be happier. And she just became an American citizen a week ago. And you think, you know, things are pretty good. And yesterday's miracle, God's shining on us. The two cops that got stabbed, emotionally disturbed person, but there are people out there putting their lives at risk for you and me all the time.
And again, not even a sidebar story, but the subcontext of yesterday's plane ditching into the Hudson River were the people of the New York waterways, were the people of the NYPD, the FDNY, the Coast Guard.
Go back and remember 6-odd years ago, when we put together with Joe Bruno, the head of the Commissioner for Office Emergency Management, this SIMS plan, situation management, whatever it's called, where we talked about it. Everybody made a pitch for themselves.
Right, everybody was arguing for their
position.
And, you
know, in the end, if they can't get together, I make the decision. And we wrote it down and said, okay, this is what we're going to live with. This is who's in charge. Turns out airplane crashes are a joint between the PD and the FDNY. But we've gone since then, and at every one of these things, it works. They show up. They've trained together. I mean, the police and fire have talked about and talked to New York Waterways, and there was Circle Line as well, of what do you do if you have to rescue somebody from the middle of the river. And they've practiced. They've role-played. They've studied. They've written up plans. And yesterday, it works. Now, that's what the public has a right to expect. So I'm not suggesting they sit back and say, oh, my God, it's so wonderful. The amazing thing would be, if it didn't work, because these guys work so hard and they really... I can't tell you we're always going to respond the right way. I can't tell you we've thought of everything. But most of what these people do day in and day out is think about what could happen and get ready. In case, I talked about in my speech, supposing you had a terrorist attack here like the Mumbai, number of incidents, same time, heavily armed people. We train for that. What do you do if you have a hurricane? We train for that. What do you do if you have an airplane that ditches in the Hudson? We train for that. And, you know, it's in some senses, same thing. Think about in a school. I mean, the teachers and the principal get together and they talk about what if, not necessarily a natural disaster or something, but what if they get a certain kind of student with a certain kind of problem, what are they going to do?
Fire drills.
Sure.
Fire drills, right?
Yeah, but just even in adjusting teaching methods. A sanitation department. I mean, every part of this city, they do that. There's roughly 300,000 people. And when people say, what are we getting for our money? That's what you're getting for your money. And that's all good stuff, and you shouldn't sit there and say, oh, it's so wonderful. It's what you expect. You should expect. That's why these people are really professionals.
Yeah, the reason we say it's so wonderful is because not every city can say they can do it or demonstrate that they can do it. And not every place can say it.
All we can worry about in this city, New York City residents reach into their pockets. They pay for all this training. They pay for all those cops and firefighters and all the other people that work in this city to be there. You can complain all you want about the tax rate, and nobody wants it to be high. Nobody wants to pay. But the alternative is to not have these services. They don't come for nothing. I got a call yesterday from the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, where this plane was going, who, you know, just said everybody he'd talked to, all his residents, they were ecstatic of the service they got here and the response. And I walked around. About half the people taken off the plane came to the New York side, half went to the New Jersey side. So I was over at the ferry terminal on the New York side and talked to a whole bunch of them, some from here going down there, some from down there going back home. And, I said, well, you know, welcome to New York, those of you that we don't normally like you to arrive this way.
Yeah, can I get you a blanket?
The Red Cross came through, everybody had a blanket. It's just another thing that works. But it's, in many senses, it should put a smile on everybody's faces.
Let me ask you from an operational standpoint. I was curious yesterday watching it unfold most of us did. Do you and the police department, not you personally, but the police department, fire department, do they have video? Did they have video of what was going on back to command?
In some places you do, some places you don't. In this case, all you had to do was
turn on the TV.
Right. All of the networks had cameras very quickly. It was easy to put a camera on the West Side Highway.
Or
in a helicopter, right. So that's easy to do. Cameras can do a lot. But the thing that's funny or interesting is the facts always change. You know, you're never sure, and you can't jump to conclusions. Number one, I refused to speculate yesterday in the press conference as to what was the cause, although there was a lot of evidence, or hearsay at least, that both engines ingested birds, which is perfectly reasonable,
logical.
It's one of the few explanations of why you would lose both engines at exactly the same time, and but you can't speculate. That's what the National Transportation Safety Board does. I got a call from Mary Peters, the outgoing Secretary of the Department of Transportation, who is the one that's been so helpful to New York and offered us all that money for congestion pricing, which we then turned down. And she just went on and on. Everything that she had heard through the FAA, they just went, how great all of the services here were, how everybody pulled together. And it's not just, in all fairness, city services, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Coast Guard, the state. We asked for a helicopter just to take a look. And
EMTs on both sides of the river.
Absolutely. And I'm sure all the people, the different services in New Jersey, did exactly the same. And they deserve credit for it. It's pulling together.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it turned out beautifully well, and we should all be pleased for that. Now all they have to do is get that airplane off the dock.
The dock
is made for boats, not airplanes.
Last night, after all of this, I went down to Battery Park City to just talk to the cops and the firefighters who were there. They're freezing. You have no idea.
Well, when I saw those people standing on the wing in the water, I'm thinking to myself.
For them, the adrenaline was probably going.
They
couldn't feel anything. The cops and the firefighters, and the plane was, one wing is under a pier. I don't know what they did last night. They were waiting for the slack tide and then put a big crane on. The Army Corps of Engineers crane wasn't big enough to pick it up. I think weighs 165.
Well, they've got a huge crane next to it right now.
They're going to bring in a big one today and pick it up. You put it on a barge. They probably just take the wings off and then you truck it someplace. It's scrap. You can't use these things once they go in the water because of corrosion and that sort of thing.
I said on the radio this morning. I said if you're out in the market for an A320, make sure you didn't get one.
Well,
Airbus
would like even before this. If you're in the market for an A320 for any airplane today, call them.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We've got lots to talk about here on the John Gambling Show. It's 16 minutes after. Good morning and welcome aboard the Friday John Gambling Show. That, of course, includes Mayor Michael Bloomberg. It also includes you. Before we finish up, if you've got a question for the mayor, here's the telephone number. You better get in line fast, though. We fill up quickly. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Okay, State of the City address yesterday. You were a busy man yesterday. Lots to do.
Busy yesterday. Tried to focus on the good things. The bad news is the budget that you'll hear on January 30th. But there's an awful lot of good things going on. The city still has got the best hand to play. And there are some things that we can do. Everybody's talking. I've tried to outline some things that we can do that don't require extra money, which we don't have, and that are practical. You know, everybody talks, for example, about infrastructure, which I've, as you know, the biggest proponent of.
Yeah, you've been there right there at the beginning.
But if you want to create jobs, most of the people in this city who are getting laid off work in offices, work in stores, work in restaurants. They can't drive backhoes. They're not going to be. So you have to create other kinds of jobs.
And
for
you said 400,000 was a goal for those 6
years.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, it's, where are you going to get growth? Small businesses. Big businesses, I hope they all recover. I hope they all move here. We work at that very hard. But small businesses, if you've got a store that employs 10 people and it goes out of business, you've got 10 people without a job. If we can keep them in business or let them grow a little bit and grow to 12 people, 20% increase.
How does the city help that?
A number of ways. You can provide counseling. There are lots of loan programs for small businesses. We can direct people. We don't have a lot of city money to lend them, but there are angel funds, private funds. And we're going to take $3 million out of our EDC budget, which is very big, so it's a very small amount, and leverage that, because if we put that in, we can get others to do the same thing. And, you know, training, but attracting small business. You know, you and I used to talk about, Dr. Roth going on and on about a five-borough economic diversification plan. There's 17 sitcoms being filmed in the city. Each one probably employs a couple of hundred people. That's what we've been, it's actually been doing. Can you imagine if
you better hope they're successful, otherwise they go off the air.
Absolutely,
right.
Absolutely. But it's, these things, you got to really make a difference. And yes, Wall Street, when it declines, we get very badly hurt. We love Wall Street. It makes a lot of money, pays a lot of salaries, buys a lot of things. But the more you depend on it, the more vulnerable you are when things turn down, as they obviously have in the last year. One of the things I'm worried about is you don't want the people who are getting laid off to go to work for financial service firms elsewhere, because when the industry starts coming back, we want them to be here. So finding jobs for people who have been laid off from Wall Street is just as important as finding jobs for people being laid off elsewhere. I was looking in the paper today, Saks laid off 9% of its workforce. And you go, just drive down the street, the number of empty stores and restaurants really is worrisome. We can either sit and complain about it or we can do something about it. And at the same time, it's also true, crime continues to come down in this city. All of the experts said you'd never recover from 9/11. All the experts said as soon as the economy weakens, crime will go up. That's not true. We recovered very quickly, and it's continuing to come down. And we're going to have to make it come down with a smaller police department, but there's no reason why we can't. We've got a whole bunch of strategies. You know, Ray Kelly and his staff are very innovative. Same thing with the fire department. They have deaths by fires, lowest 7 years in ever history. They get to fires quicker. They now have a new dispatch system. We're working on a brand new 911, which will combine police and fire. Right now, you call in, it's basically run by police. If it's a fire, they transfer you over to a fire person. Now we're going to do it all the same, and we dispatch earlier and that sort of thing. Why? You're going to have to get to these fires, and we're going to have to get there with fewer engines, fewer ladders. You know, just the economics of our city and of the country are going to have to do more with less, but that doesn't mean we have to do less.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't mean the result has to be any less, and that you've demonstrated.
If you let it become less, then you've got a bigger problem, because then things start spiraling down. They may go down anyways, but you certainly want to arrest the rate.
All right. What have you been told? What is your sense? Ray Kelly was talking about federal money for 900 more cops. I use that as an example more than the specific.
Number one, the only thing isn't just numbers. It's the quality of the people you hire. We keep raising the academic standards to go to work in the city. It is how well you train them. The jobs that we have to do today are very different than they used to be. Today we worry about threats from overseas. In the past, we only worried about threats on our streets. But if you combine all of that stuff, I think that if we get more money from the federal government, it's all fungible, number one. Whether you get it for one part of the city government or the other, we have to make decisions based on what the city needs, not where the funds are available.
Right. I understand. But a lot of this money that supposedly is coming out of Washington is, quote-unquote, earmarked for specific programs.
Yeah, but then we can just take money and we'll move it over.
Oh, you don't care.
You do care. You'd like to have, because it's tricky to do that. But the bottom line is we have to sit down first and say, what do we need? Not what's a pet project. Number two, it's also true that when the federal government gives us money, we should say thank you. I saw in the paper today, Anthony Weiner talked about a bill he had sponsored, which didn't get considered in the Senate. But he was talking about the federal monies that we get. You should say thank you. Somebody should say thank you, Anthony. Yeah. He's just one of a bunch of people that worked on it. Every city wants it, but that's great. We need money to help defray the cost of Medicaid. It's a cost ballooning. We need money to help us with education. But you got to sit back first and say, what does the city need, and then try to find different ways of funding it. And I will have a budget proposal at the end of January, which I've got to make some assumptions. Will we get federal money? What will the state do? We're just guessing. And then sometime between the end of January and June, when the city has to pass with the city council an actual budget, we hopefully by then will know what federal programs we qualify for. How much of that money comes directly to us rather than going through the state bureaucracy, which every mayor in the country will tell you is a disaster. I'm not knocking the governor or the state legislature, Shelley Silver or Malcolm Smith, but that's just the real world, that monies get diverted and it takes time and that sort of thing. So all mayors keep lobbying Washington, give it directly to the cities, and some will and some won't. And then we've got to take a look and see between federal actions, state actions, and another few months look at the economy, and then make a real budget, which will be more accurate and different than what we propose. But the law says I've got to have a budget proposal the end of January that totally closes the budget gaps, and we will.
Just looking at the breakout, this was out of the Wall Street Journal this morning, the breakout of the proposed $850 billion stimulus package, whatever you want to call it. The two largest groups are state fiscal relief and Medicaid relief to the states, totaling almost $200 billion of the 800.
All the states are in trouble. They've all spent money they don't have, and now they're looking to Washington. And you can sit there and say, well, if you give them the money, there's no reason they're ever going to pay attention.
That's something I've said, yes.
I'm sure you have. The other side of the coin is, it's also true, we're here. You should have stopped them before, but now we're here. So do you want them to have to cut back? And, so it's not quite so one-sided.
Never what is.
You'd, in your instincts, you'd like to teach them a lesson. Yeah, but we need the money. And I don't know how much of that's going to come out. The politics of legislatures are everybody gets something, and those that scream the loudest get the most. And it has little to do with what the experts say are really important. There's an awful lot of economists that will tell you all of these stimulus programs, history shows, don't do a lot, that it's monetary policy more than anything, and it's leadership at the highest level of, the city and the state and the federal level of encouraging people, convincing them that the best is yet to come. That was one of the things I tried to do yesterday. I want to live in this city. I want my kids to grow up in this city. I think for all our problems, it's still the greatest city in the world. Where else would you want to live? And yes, we're going to have some tough times. And yes, it's terrible if it's you. It's not so tough. It's the other guy. But nevertheless, in spite of all, you got to be able to look at the bright side. That's what will take us out of this. Having said all that, these guys are going to write checks to an awful lot of different entities and different people, and we're all going to complain. I've given this example 1,000 times. You want to bail out Detroit. Everybody says, we've got to make it work better. Detroit is dysfunctional and losing too much money. Well, which do you want to do? Do you want to keep 1 million people employed, or do you want to have an industry that can compete and stand on its own? Because if you want an industry that's going to stand on its own,
you got to get rid of half of the million.
Which
people.
Is a million? No, it's a million. Would be half.
Right.
You know, half the deal is half the factories, half this, half that. If you want to keep everybody employed, then you send them a different kind of check. So, you know.
But you see,
Obama does not have.
We're going to have to make a decision one way or the other.
No. No. Well, we don't.
We just continue to.
All of the above is the decision.
Trip our way through all of this.
All of the above is typically. Now, maybe we'll get surprised, but, you know, and that's Obama's great challenge. Coming up with good ideas. There are a lot of smart people with a lot of good ideas who can tell you what we should do. But the real world is. We have a democracy, so it's up to the legislature to a great extent. In the end, the president proposes. It's the
right.
And the same thing in
the
governor.
Gang of Congress, right.
And the same thing with the mayor. The president, governor, and mayor propose. It's the legislature that actually has to adopt. Number two, we don't live in a world where we can do things totally on our own. We just cannot do things in a vacuum. The rest of the world has a very big influence on us. You can say we shouldn't. Yeah, but everybody's job is dependent on people coming here or us selling overseas or a mutual defense against terrorism. I mean, you just can't close the borders and do anything totally on your own. And so President-elect Obama is coming in. Enormous amount of goodwill, enormous expectations. He's the guy of change. And change is not easy. If change were easy, other people would have done it. And let's all hope that he does.
Exactly so, because I just don't see. I completely and totally understand your explanation of politics and the real world, yet it doesn't seem to get us. I cynically say we never get off the mark. We always end up in exactly
well,
the same
place. Well, you can say that, or you can look at a brighter side. We do have the world's greatest democracy. We've lasted 235 years. The poor here need a lot of help, but they're an awful lot better off than the poor in many other parts of the world. We have a New York City crime rate. It's one of the safest, not the safest big city, one of the safest cities in the world. Streets are clean. Most people have jobs. Most people keep their homes. There's an awful lot of good things. Democracy hasn't been all that bad to us. Let's not just look at the downside.
All right.
Glass is an awful lot more than half full, John. Come on. It's three quarters.
I would like to agree with you.
90%.
You're absolutely right. Let's find out what's happening. 21 before 9 o'clock. We continue. Phones, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the telephone number is easy. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Story earlier this week in one of the newspapers about a couple of private hospitals closing out or potentially closing out in Queens. I think it was St. John's and Mary Immaculate. Do we have too many hospitals in the city? Can you have that problem?
You would always like to have a hospital on your block along with a police precinct
and
house and a firehouse. Sure. The business of medicine is getting to be tougher every day. It is there's no solutions that anybody's been willing to live with we've come for the cost of delivering good medical services. The technology gets more complex and better. It's worth it, but small hospitals have trouble affording it. There are fewer doctors who can get green cards, and the vast bulk of the doctors working in a lot of these hospitals are Southeast Asian and Latin American, and you know, doctors from around the world, they want to come and work here. It's the greatest place to train, even if they're going to go back to their own country. Eventually, the quality of the medicine's actually pretty good. We've got to take a look in this country as to why we spend $3,000 or $4,000 per capita per year more on medical care than they do in Western Europe, and yet life expectancy in Western Europe is 2 or 3 years greater than it is here. I mean, those are real numbers, rough, but real numbers. And as good a measure of what the problem is. What the details are under it, I don't know. In England, for example, if you need open-heart surgery and you're getting taken care of by what the disparaging here we'd call socialized medicine, but government-provided services, you may wait a very long time for a heart transplant because they just don't have enough capacity. That's true. On the other hand, the likelihood of you needing a heart transplant is much lower. They focus a lot on preventive medicine. And here, the way people get paid, doctors, hospitals, whatever, you have to have the operation to get the money. If the doctor spends time telling you how to avoid needing it, nobody gets paid. And so these small
hospitals, a little upside down.
The big
it?
Hospitals have enormous problems. Our public hospitals, we're going to have a big problem how we pay for things. Small hospitals have even less options. They have less likely to have boards of directors where private people can give them money to help them through tough times or to build a new building. You know, you go to these hospitals and there's a building with somebody's name on it. Somebody gave money for that. But a small hospital have a tough time.
Are you a government health care guy? Do you think the federal government should provide us with?
I think some people will never be able to afford private care, and we as a society have made the decision we're not going to let you die on the streets. So if you take, let me answer the question. We've put billions of dollars in the last 7 years into our public hospitals. If you need emergency medical care or a serious operation or something, the 11 HHC hospitals in this city are as good as any 11 hospitals you can find any place in the world. The quality of the medicine is spectacular. Some of the private hospitals are spectacular as well in this city. I was going to name a few, but I'll miss a few, and I don't want to diss anybody. Here we have enormous number of options in terms of great, great, great hospitals. I, as you know, went to Johns Hopkins and was chairman of the board. In Baltimore, there are a couple of good hospitals. There's a great hospital in Hopkins. And then, you know, in the surrounding area, there are lots of these smaller hospitals, which are great if you're going to have a baby or get a broken arm fixed, very competent. If you're going to have very complex surgery or diagnosis of a rare disease or a disease that's hard to detect or that manifests itself in different ways, lupus, for example. A lot of people have lupus. It tends to hit women more than men, but some men get it. Tends to hit blacks more than whites and Latinos. Nobody knows why, but whites and Latinos get it as well as blacks. It's one of these diseases that manifests itself in different ways. Hard to diagnose. A doctor who sees a lot of different patients has got a better chance of doing, of recognizing it. Not to knock the doctors in the smaller hospitals, but they just don't have the technology and the experience day in and day out. So, yeah, I'm a believer in our public hospitals. I don't think that socialized medicine is necessarily the answer. I think it is a part of the solution. We have to figure out how to do things where doctors don't order tests just because they're worried about getting sued if they don't. Medical health records. One of the things the federal government's all of a sudden been talking about this, and there's money in your article there.
There is. In fact, $20 billion, according to the Obama people, are going to health information technology.
Right. Well, I can just tell you, in this city, we have electronic health records. Tom Frieden and the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, along with some others, have created this system, and there's thousands of doctors on it already for hundreds of thousands of patients. And what it does is, if you know, doctor says to you, well, have you had this test before?
What do
you
mean? Nobody knows.
Apps. Just look at the computer, and it's there. Or he's prescribing something but doesn't know what else you take. You don't remember. And it says, oops. These two drugs don't go together. They can have, it'll tell you.
Do you think that the people in Washington are suggesting that these computerized medical records would ultimately reduce the costs because extraneous tests wouldn't have to be made? I see in the system the way it is now, doctors spending Medicare money, for example, up to the limits. Just because they can.
Well, I don't know if just because they can, but one of the things that's for sure is the differences between us and Western Europe medicine. We are in a litigious society. People sue all the time. Cost of malpractice insurance is enormous for doctors. If you could reduce the incidence of mistakes and accidents, you would reduce that cost. Forget about the getting into the argument about whether people should have a right to sue or all this stuff. Just, this is... Electronic health records is one of the few things that it's hard to see why we don't do it, because it doesn't hurt anybody. everything else, cut the number of beds, use this kind of medicine, get you in and out quicker out of the hospital. There are jobs involved. People who provide those services don't like you to cut back, or that sell those drugs don't like you to cut back. But electronic health records, it's kind of hard to find anybody that's a loser. And we've been doing it in our city. And that's one of the things I tried to talk about yesterday. They talk about all these things. They talk about green jobs. I don't know what a green job is, but I can tell you in New York City, we're going to change our building code so that you have to green your building more. That will create jobs. And we're going to train you for green jobs. Well, I don't know what training is. It's plumbers, it's electricians, it's carpenters, it's people who've been doing these kinds of things.
In the construction business, they just changed their focus.
Absolutely. So it's a lot of talk about things, but I'm determined, at least, and with, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of money to do it, in this city, doing some of these things. And one of the things is keep pushing our electronic health records.
Do you think some of the job estimates that we are hearing on an hourly basis from various entities are inflated, or are sort of...
And the answer is nobody knows. I mean, you know, you're sort of picking a number out of the air, partially based on hope, partially based on what promotes your cause if you're trying to get money or something, partially based on real estimates that, you know, you try to make with real data. But predicting the future is very difficult. I'll never forget Henry Kaufman telling me that many years ago. He said, you know, if you have a graph and you go off the page, you're a lousy prognosticator. When you draw your graph, you should know what the maximum and minimum is.
That's funny. Foreclosure dollars. I know that you want to do what you can in New York City. You've gotten some money from the housing department.
Yeah, we've got some. We're trying to, when houses are foreclosed, we'd like to find money to buy the house, revamp it or renovate it, and then sell it and get the buyer a mortgage. And Sean Donovan is leaving to go run HUD, had a program which will continue and build up, I hope, that we've gotten about 17,000 people mortgages, and we've only had 5 or 6 out of 17,000 foreclosures.
How have you been so successful when others have been less than?
Great mayor.
Excuse me.
Why didn't you pick up on that?
How silly.
All kids, the answer is, number one, debt service, in all fairness, probably less because it's affordable housing. Number two, you don't get the mortgage and can't buy the house unless you show us real documentation.
Credit.
And it's I think it's the rule, something like a third of your income or less. And we interview to see what the likelihood is of you keeping your job. You may lose it or not, but chances are we want to make sure you can keep it. And then we do something else. We take a second mortgage out on your house, which means you can't refinance your first mortgage
without your okay.
And take out any equity, because that's what people were doing. They were taking it out and spending it elsewhere. It's constantly making their house more and more risky. Can't do that here.
Some smart money guy must have come up with that idea. That's good protection. That's just common
Sean
sense.
Sean Donovan and all the people that work with him. He's not the only one. I mean, you know, our city affordable housing plan will go on without him. I'm thrilled for him. He's got a job. He'll do a great job for the country. I'm sorry for us. Will we find somebody else? Yeah, hopefully we'll find somebody even better. And I have a promise from him to help me find somebody better.
All right, speaking of cabinet members, I think it's Arnie Duncan, Secretary of Education for Barack Obama. He has some ideas about lengthening school days, summertime. I'm not suggesting that's anything for an immediate. Do you think that change here in the city, but is that a good idea?
It's hard to argue that more time in the classroom doesn't provide you with
a better education.
Some people would say, well, you should also have real life experiences. That's true, but a lot of our kids don't live in situations where they're going to get it. All they're doing is hanging out in the corner or parked in front of a television or electronic games or something. The problem with all of this stuff is who's going to pay for it? What we have done in the city is we have increased the school year by the equivalent of 25 days a year. Because we negotiated in our last contract 25 minutes extra class on average, which translates to 25 days a year if you do the math. And that's going to be one of the reasons why test scores keep going up and graduation rates keep going up. Now, is there a point of diminishing returns? I don't know. I can tell you for sure there's a point of diminishing ability because we don't have any more money. We're going to have some real tough times here. And education, I mean, our education system costs us roughly $20 billion. We have 80,000 teachers, the best teacher group in the world. Then when I came into office, we had 12,000 teachers quit and couldn't fill the spots. Now we have 5,000 teachers quit every year in a base of 80, which is a low turnover rate. And we have 50,000 to 60,000 applicants from across the country every year for those jobs. People want to come here and teach. It's exciting. The system's getting better. And their parents don't object to them coming here anymore because
that's
it's
true.
Safe.
That was an important
criteria. Makes a very big difference.
Criteria.
Sure, because these tend to be young people right
sure.
out of college.
I remember that.
But, you know, if you do the math, you'd think we have a class size of 13. The truth of the matter is every special ed kid gets a teacher, full-time teacher, just one teacher per kid. And if you do that leaves us with a class size of something like 23. So, you know, most of the a big chunk of the teachers aren't in the classroom. They're just with one kid, and it puts pressure on the teachers. If they had more time, would they do more? Yeah. Where's the money going to come from?
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll take some phone calls in just a second. 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. 8 minutes. All right, Mr. Mayor, just a couple of minutes left here. We're going to go to the telephone. We are going to start with Ann on line one here. If you'll pick up your headphone, you'll be all set. Ann, what's your question for the mayor?
Yes, I want to ask him why we can't have a stimulus package where the individuals receive a gift certificate, which they have to spend in stores, restaurant, retail places, say $1,000 for individuals, $2 for families, and that way the economy would flow because the department stores, all the retail would do good business, restaurants would do good business.
How many thousands you want on that credit card?
I said just $1,000. It's a gift certificate, not a credit card.
No, I understand. No, same difference.
You know, that's one of the parts of these stimulus packages. Keep in mind, about a year ago, the federal government did exactly that, $150 billion, which we thought was an enormous amount of money at the time. Today, it's peanuts.
So right, walking around.
Right. And the effect on the economy was virtually zero. Maybe you could see a tiny blip, but there's so much noise in the data. It did not look like it worked. What they will do, Ann, is certainly send out some money. Rather than give gift certificates, they will send out checks. Some people will pay down their credit card. Some people will put it in the bank. Most people will spend the money, so it does it the way you do it. It's just a lot more efficient to send out a check and let people pay rather than have a gift certificate which has to be exchanged. And what do you do if you don't want to spend it all in one store and the logistics of that? But that is one of the ways, Ann. Although, as I said before, there are a lot of economists that say in the end that's good politics, but it doesn't seem to get things going. You'd think it would, but it doesn't.
All right, Annie, thank you very much. Let's go to Flemington, New Jersey. Dick's on the phone. What's your question for the mayor, Dick?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. It's an honor. I just wanted to make two points. One, actually, is to commend the city and the capability of the skill of everybody yesterday. And I think everybody in New York needs to stand back and look at the fact that we are probably the only city in the globe that has the ability to do what we did, use the skills that were in place, let people do their job, and then finish the job and walk away and go back to normal after a momentous occasion. And I think that that theme should be driven. But the second piece of that is there a way that maybe we can use this as an example to the students in school that need to be shown if you really do get serious and learn a skill to contribute, you can make a tremendous difference.
Well, that's a great idea. You know, the last couple of Saturdays ago, I was dedicating a plaque at a firehouse, and I said, you know, before I became mayor, I never really thought about all these jobs being dangerous jobs and that sort of thing. But when, you know, I hope the kids today, when they look at that corner where it says, you know, Firefighter Joe Smith Way or Police Officer Sam Jones Way, they stop and say, hey, they did something wonderful. I want to be like them. Or maybe when they see it on television. I don't know, Dick, whether it comes down to that reality of those are real people doing real jobs. But, you know, it's the good news is there are an awful lot of people willing to dedicate their lives, police officers, firefighters, lots of other people who go into municipal service, at least in the city, young people who go to work in the military, fighting and sometimes dying to protect us. We have an all-volunteer army. And, you know, there are plenty of people.
And you never know who's watching, to Dick's point, which I thought was a really good one. You never know who's watching all of this and what it means to them and how it translates
whether other
into city, their
always say, hey, you know, I should reach in my pocket and pay more taxes to have more and better trained firefighters and cops, so and have them, like Joe Bruno, our Office of Emergency Management, keeps bugging everybody, do more planning. It's a broken record, and it pays off. Now, do the other places say, oh, it's wonderful, New York did it, but we're not going to, when it gets translated, then you've got to pay for it. And that's the dirty little secret. Everybody wants things. Somebody's got to pay.
Somebody's got to write the check for it. That's going to do it for us today, Mr. Mayor. Always a pleasure. Next Friday, I'm going to be away, and so we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it.
All right, and enjoy the very special week ahead with the inauguration coming up on Tuesday.